welcome to episode 8 of the NAFcast, recorded in March 2015. This episode sees the return of Spikey as we talk over a few of the developments that have happened in the Blood Bowl world since the last episode. Our two main topics were the road to the NAF Championships, tournament on Fumble, and the Blood Bowl World Cup, for which registration closed last week, with 888 coaches making their way to Italy. As well as our chat, I've also recorded an interview with Darkabus, who's the Australian and New Zealand national tournament organiser. And he's got some interesting stuff to say on Blood Bowl in that part of the world. Before we get on to those few bits and bobs, I'd like to mention, in terms of the World Cup, that there's a group now on Facebook which is designed to find players to test out the World Cup rules. So all you do is you use the test mode on Fumble and you set up an 1100 team and give it the skills you're going to give it, decide where you want to play. You can find them on Facebook. It's got 150 people already there, and it seems that all you do is you post anyone like a game, and anyone who's on will give you a game. That's the way it works. I've also got a little advert for a tournament that's coming up, a charity tournament. It was mentioned in the last NAF newsletter, but it's worth giving it another mention because it's a really good cause. So we'll have the advert, and then we'll have the chat between me and Spikey, and we'll finish with the interview with Dan Hutchison, also known as Darkabus, who's the Australian and New Zealand NTO. Enjoy!
In a world where orcs and elves battle for a keg of beer, where the laws of Nuffle change with the wind, a game is played, fouls are committed, and death is inevitable. Many fans will flock to the stadiums to cheer their stars on. There are winners and losers, and only one team will rise from obscurity to claim the prize, the Empire Cup.
I'm Murnak, star blitzer for the Long Island Blood Bowl League defending champion Iron Fang Marauders. The LIVBL presents to you the Empire Cup, a NAF-sponsored resurrection-style tournament being held on April 25th in the 15th year of this century. The Empire Cup will be held at Game Master Games at 954 South Broadway in Hicksville, New York, 30 miles east of New York City. It is a one-day tournament featuring four games for participating teams. Bring a 1.1 million gold crown team, and Sigmar's Blessing will add up to 100k more of skills to your team of normal and double skills, but not more than two skills to any one player, and no one skill can be added more than four times. Awards will be given out for first, second, third, and last place, as well as most touchdowns, most casualties, best defense, sportsmanship, painting, and the best stunty team. And because Sigmar has a sense of humor, he is adding skinks and warpstone goblins for the stunty competition. And this tournament features Brooklyn rules, where fouls and secret weapons will generate casualties. The tournament will be $21 for NAF members and $31 for non-NAF members. It will also be a part of the East Coast Tournament Series, so it's a great opportunity to pick up some points. So come to Game Master Games on April 25th of the 15th year and test your mettle at the Empire Cup. It's just 40 minutes from Brooklyn, 3.5 hours from Binghamton, 3.5 hours from Harrisburg, 5 hours from Northern Virginia, and I'm calling out those Skulls and Ones guys from Richmond. 6 hours is worth it. For more information, check out facebook.com/EmpireCupBB or email EmpireCupBB@gmail.com. This is Murnak.
So I'm here with Spikey again, who's back after the he was here in the, was it the first episode you were in?
Not the very first, no.
Wasn't it? Oh yeah, I did an introductory one, didn't I?
Yeah.
But one of the early ones, and then didn't come back for a little while.
Yeah.
But it's back now.
That's right.
To talk about Blood Bowl.
Back playing Bob to your gym.
Which is which?
I don't know. I think Bob's the thick one.
Well, I think that's a bit harsh. So we've established that Spikey hasn't been keeping up to date with anything Blood Bowl. Is that right?
Yes, it's fairly accurate.
Whereas I've been looking after the Facebook community, and I've been looking after the
spending too much time on TFF. So I know about various things that are happening, and we're going to talk about them. Two weeks ago now, the road to the NAF Championship finished, which was the massive sort of 250-player fumble tournament, which you didn't play in?
No. No, I play a little bit of fumble, but not very much.
Fair enough. And so that was six rounds to run in parallel with the NAF Championship rules, basically.
Okay.
So it was 1,100, pick your team. All star players allowed, but you had to have 11 players first, and lots of inducements allowed as well.
Okay.
And it was a new setup on Fumble, so they'd put some new functionality in
there. Yeah, I can imagine the client must have had fun handling that number of games in a tournament. I don't know how that works.
No, I think that was fine. I think the number of teams... I think the problem was the progression thing.
Okay.
And choosing...
Oh, trying the scoring and working at who plays who.
Yeah.
Was so it the, Swiss or was
yeah,
it...
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So it's exactly the same. It was Swiss.
Good grief.
And the tiebreaker was net touchdowns plus net casualties.
Okay.
So not particularly favouring either Bash or Dash teams, although the Bash won it in the end. So he had to put the whole Swiss thing in. I don't think that had ever been on Fumble before. And also the choosing your team... like putting the skills on, so the skills appeared automatically on
yeah,
the players.
Yeah, it's not progressive, I guess. So
no.
It's more like a, yeah.
Yeah,
a
so
resurrection
absolutely. So
yeah.
The resurrection sort of functionality had never been on there before, and that was the new thing, which is
very
exciting. And the idea is that this is going to be the first in a series of NAF tournaments on Fumble.
Okay.
So it's a big sort of partnership thing going on.
Okay, and how does that work in terms of NAF rankings? Is there any scope to...
Good question. Yeah, there is going
to
be
align
an...
Align it with the...
There is going to be an online NAF ranking.
Uh-huh.
Yes, but
okay.
We don't know exactly how that's going to work yet. So the first tournament will feed into... So everyone who took part in the NAF champion in the road to the NAF will have an online ranking.
Okay.
Soon.
Interesting.
Or not soon.
Yeah.
one of the two.
And
at some point.
And what about NAF approved races? Because I know in Fumble you've got the chance to play.
Well, the Stunty League ones.
Well, other things. I was thinking the
apes.
What do you call them? Yeah, and
no, as far as I know,
other
it's just going to be the 24.
Okay.
We were going to have the apes in an R one, weren't we? In Cake Bowl.
Yeah, I think so.
Is that what the commissioner said? But I don't know if that's going to happen. I haven't got them. Have you got the apes?
They're coming in my impact order.
Ah, yes. soon they
when,
will be
when
coming.
When it turns up.
Well, supposedly they will be packed up by April, so that'll be fine. So it ran, so the tournament ran from the end of January until beginning of March, I suppose. It must have been 6 weeks. So middle of January to the beginning of March. And we had 254 players. And there's a final, like there is at the NAF Championships. So after five rounds, there were three teams on six wins.
Okay.
And so the two of those with the biggest... No, on five wins, sorry. And the two of those with the biggest tiebreaker went through to the final.
Okay. Because that's odd for me, because I would have expected with that number of coaches, you'd have done a knockout style. Did you get many people drop out after losing their first sort of one or two games? Or
not many.
Did most people continue then?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
The vast majority continued. I think
that's encouraging.
We probably had... I haven't looked at the numbers. I think the numbers are there if you want to look at them. but I would think that out of the 250, I would say that at least 230 completed the tournament.
That's pretty good, actually.
Which was good.
Yeah.
And there were a few real-life issues as well, as inevitably. So it wasn't just people going, oh, I don't want to play this anymore. There's been quite a big feedback thread going on Fumble, where people have said, did you enjoy the tournament? Would you play another one? And there were lots of people saying, well, after I lost the first game, or even after I drew the first game, I didn't, there was no point in me playing anymore. But they did carry on.
Right.
But that might affect whether they do it again next time, because it is a big commitment, I suppose.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of knockouts, I guess, is that you're still in it if you're playing. And
But I think the NAF ranking points, I think that's meant to be one of the carrots to keep people going.
Yeah.
as well as just because people just play Blood Bowl for the fun of it, and so it doesn't actually matter whether you win or not anyway. From a certain point of view,
yeah,
it doesn't actually matter in a knockout tournament.
Yeah.
Either because
I don't know, maybe it's my perception of online Blood Bowl compared to, because if you go to a tournament, you're being at the tournament and you're playing your games irrespective of your, but if you're at home and you're sat there with your computer and you're like, oh, I can't be bothered to play the next game. Maybe it's just my opinion.
It might build up a community. It might have a community develop around itself, I suppose, because the advantage of the league, there are two advantages of the league, as far as I can tell, an online league. One is that you build your team up and get to know your pixels. And the other is that you get to know the people you're playing as well, I suppose.
Yeah.
And you build up rivalries. And I guess the same thing can happen over a series of online tournaments as well. Maybe. I think that's the idea. So for me, it was lots of fun because I took a high elf team with Eldril.
Okay.
Which is great. It was lots of fun. And I definitely take Eldril to a tabletop tournament after that because he's great just with hypnotic gaze. It's just lots of, you know, until he gets surfed, which happened a couple of times. But yeah, he was lots of fun. So I just approached each game like, okay, this will be fun. Let's see what happens. Even though I think I might have even lost my first go because I lost to Gaicho, I think, the American NAF tournament director. And so I'd lost my first game, and then I was out of it anyway.
Yeah.
But it was lots of fun.
Good. How were the races represented? Did you have a fairly good spread?
Truckloads and truckloads of wood elves. And undead, as you'd imagine.
Okay.
Just loads of undead, wood elves, loads of this. Especially because there was a £55 prize.
Well, yeah.
It's the first ever online tournament where there's actually been... the first fumble tournament, I'm sorry, because obviously we had the same one last year with Cyanide. And you could win a ticket to the NAF championships there as well. But yeah, people were in it to win it.
Right.
Definitely.
Okay.
So in the final... So after the fourth round, it was quite nicely poised. Because after the fourth round, there were eight teams on four wins. I think it was like... And there was a reasonable spread in there. But all tier one teams. So two undead, one wood elf, one dark elf, one lizard man, one Amazon, and then a couple of others. And then the final was undead against dark elves. They were the two teams with the best record going into it.
Okay.
And then the undead team beat them up. But it went to overtime, which is quite a lot of fun. And I recorded the final with all the commentary. You know, you can... chat with your spectators. So it had 54 spectators.
Wow.
And they were all chatting. And if you go to the replay function in Fumble, you don't see the chat and you don't hear the cheers. And so I just recorded it with all the chat and all the...
Okay, have you put that on your YouTube
account? And that's on YouTube, which is quite cool. There was nothing slanderous said because I'd have had to edit it there. Because occasionally you do get people laughing at the people playing, but it was quite good fun, I think. No one's complained too much yet. So I think it was a success. There was lots of sort of commentary all the way through by Purple Goo, who was organising it. He did his picks of the round and things like that. Because you do, I think most Fumble tournaments have that, like the majors. They have who's going to win it and quite a lot of sort of background chat there really as well. So we'll see what happens. I don't know what the next. I don't know what the plans are for the next tournament, online wise, but we'll see what she'll see. Yeah. But you play Cyanide more, don't you?
If you can call it playing, yeah. I have it on my tablet, and I kill the opponent, the AI, which is very easy to do. So it's a therapy thing. You just pitch clear the AI every game.
How long does a game take against the AI? I don't think I've ever played a whole game.
It's not very long. It's not very long, especially when you've got a developed chaos team. It's just
Do you have to sit there while the computer takes its moves?
Yes, but it helps when they've only got two players left on the pitch.
I really like playing on the computer, but I always play against other human beings.
Yeah, I just find it difficult to organise the time. So
yeah,
you know, the tabletop league is enough for me at the minute, and even this year, I don't think I'm going to be attending many tournaments. Hopefully, Thrud.
Yes.
And that's about it, I think.
Yes. Have you seen it's meant to be Frank's last Thrud?
Yeah, I heard. Yeah.
Hopefully not the last one, because it's lots of fun. But yeah, I'm probably going to take both boys down to that, and we'll camp, and it all will be lovely. Yeah, looking forward to that one. Middle of August.
Yeah, I keep trying to go, and then real life throws things in my way.
But it's
way.
Not going to.
No, hopefully,
blocked out
no,
the calendar.
No, my neighbours are married now, so they can't. Hopefully they won't divorce and remarry for this time.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Right, the other big tournament is the World Cup. 888 people going, but not me.
That's just
and
insane.
Not you.
That is
so
insane.
Lots of other people.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is. So that's 148 teams must be. So 148 times six. Yeah, from all over the place. We've got three from Australia and New Zealand. So two from Australia, one from New Zealand. And then we've got American teams, Canadian, and then truckloads
awesome.
From
yeah,
Europe.
I guess it's good for Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there's quite a lot of Italian teams, as you'd expect. So there's about 40 yeah. Italian teams, I think. But there's the whole breakdown is on there, actually. Let's have a quick look. Yeah, so because it's absolutely ages until the... until the tournament, obviously.
Okay.
But they wanted everyone to book up so that they could plan it.
That's going to be insane. Surely that number of Blood Bowl coaches.
Yeah. Well, the big thing is how they're going to arrange it, I guess. Because there's going to be a new tournament. There's going to have to be a new tournament software because the one that was used for last World Cup isn't being used anymore. And Score can't handle it. Because of the time it takes, because Score's only one piece of software.
Yeah.
And so it takes too long to enter it into that. So, yeah, fingers crossed. So we've got 44 teams from Italy, because it's in Italy, 31 from France, 20 from Spain, only 9 from England, 2 from Scotland, 1 from Wales, 8 from Germany, 3 from Belgium, 1 from Netherlands, 2 from Austria, 8 from Denmark. Which isn't actually 8 from Denmark. It's just because the country that it goes down as is the captain.
Okay.
And so I know a few of those Danish teams are from Denmark.
Freebooters,
and then some
do they?
Freebooters. Yeah, absolutely. Because it doesn't actually matter where a team comes from.
No.
So you've got 1 from Canada, 2 from America, 2 from Australia, 1 from New Zealand. And then 3 random teams, it seems, at the end.
Yes.
where you've just got 18.
Are you going to pretend to be Scottish again for another... You were for the Euro Bowl last
time. I'm not going.
No.
So it doesn't really matter what I pretend to be. No, I am Scottish. I'm genuinely Scottish. Do you think I should just put on a Scottish accent for the whole thing? So yeah, it's going to be bonkers. There's 9 games over 3 days with like a load of skills at the beginning and the middle and the end. But they've tiered it this time. Have you had a look at the rules at all?
No.
Because
I'm not going. I've got no interest
but
in looking at the rules.
It's interesting. But they've never had tiers before at the World Cup, like they never have tiers at the NAF Championship.
So are they seeding players into tiers then? Or is tiers for the races?
That's a good idea. They should have tiers.
Yeah.
I do sometimes think that if the NAF Championship got much bigger, like the tabletop one, then seeding might be interesting from that point of view. In that, if you want to get people on 6 wins, then you should have some sort of seeding in the first round.
Yeah.
Maybe. Because if you don't have any seeding in the first round, then a lot of the top players will meet one of the not top players, and so they will... and so they'll get a free win, almost.
Yeah.
That's not the way seeding normally works, though, is it? Seeding's normally the opposite of that, isn't it? In that... Andrew Murray won't meet the really good players.
Yeah,
the final.
Yeah, they separate them.
So it would be almost the opposite of...
I'm confused now.
I don't know. I'm wondering, because if you had 250 players in a tabletop tournament and you wanted to get a clear winner not based on tiebreakers.
Yeah. You wouldn't want all the top players to play each other in the first round.
Why not? You would, wouldn't you?
I don't know. Would you?
I think you might. Mightn't you? Because wouldn't that help it to...
I don't know, because I think it'd be a bit odd going to a tournament and having your hardest...
I don't know. Go to bed. Do you want to take the rule book? It's around. It's on the windowsill, actually. Turn your light off at 9 o'clock, okay?
I remember. They were called mummies. Sorry.
Right, what were we talking about?
We were talking about seeding. Because for me, it's just a bit odd if you say your hardest game is going to be the first game in the tournament, not the last.
But then it won't be. Yeah, it would almost be a tiebreaker. You could have the tiebreaker as the NAF ranking of the team that you're using. Because then you'd end up... you'd play... loads of hard players. If you were going to win, if you wanted to win the tournament, you would play 6 hard games.
Yeah, I suppose.
Wouldn't you, or would you end up playing? Because it's a tricky one. What you would end up with is people taking
answers on a postcard, please. To
I like the idea, but anyway, that's not what's happening at the World Cup. No, the races are being tiered as they are in like. Lots of tournaments.
Can't imagine what the logistics is going to be like for a tournament that big.
No. So there's going to be 444 tables. Yeah, it's going to be fun. Absolutely. So good luck to them. I guess that's why they've got so long to plan, because they didn't know if it was going to be 450 people or like 900. Yeah. So that's why they had to have the cut-off now, I guess. But that's a... Yes, all very exciting. And I think there'll just be a sort of massive build up to that as time goes on. Where's my list of things that we were going to talk about?
Is it under the box?
There's another one, wasn't there? Oh, yes, like the 1,000th game. So I went to the Water Bowl, and Lycos played his 1,000th game, his 1,000th NAF game. And I think the person who's second is on about 800, and then 600, and then and so on and so on. So,
so do we know his win ratio for those 1,000 games?
I think it's not bad. I think he's pretty good. Actually, that's a good idea.
I know he's a very good player, so I kind of expect it to be quite nice.
I do wonder, though, if I could... I did not think anyone could be that good if they, if they played 1,000 games. Is it... Because the question always comes up, how do you get to be a good player?
Mm.
And quite often the answer is play lots of games. So there's a definite correlation between the number of games you played and how good a player you are.
Yeah.
Obviously. And because Hawk, who's just joined our league, I think he's played the second most games in the UK, like in 2014. And he's got massively sort of better.
But I kicked his backside in the league. Oh, no, sorry.
Tell us about that. What were you using in the league?
Chaos Pact. Oh, right. It was against the Wood Elves. That,
oh, yeah, was that? Anyway. What, his Wood Elves?
No, the yeah, Tony's Wood Elves.
Did you?
Yeah.
How did you do that?
I just had the antidote to his strength for strip balling monsters, which was strength for sure-handed ball carrier with a whole team of guard.
That seems sensible.
Yeah, but anyway, I digress. Yeah. No, he's a good player. He is.
Yeah, I've got a rubbish record with him.
He's beaten me in a few NAF games before, so it was nice to get payback.
Yeah, so Lycos is... He's now on 1,005 games, so he's carried... Oh, no, that must have been Water Bowl, because obviously his first game was 1,000th, and he's on 1,005. And he's got 565 wins in there, so 66% win ratio.
Wow.
Which is not bad.
No, it's not too shabby.
And a few Euro Bowl wins. And has he got a World Cup win? I don't think he has, because Water Bowl won the World Cup, didn't they? So just a few Eurobowl spins. But he's been to all the Eurobowl. And I recorded that on YouTube. And so you can view that for all posterity. That was against Podfrey, who had a very strange roster, who had Norse with okay. Bomber.
Interesting.
What's the name? Boomer.
Boomer,
Didn't work very well for him. And Lycos managed to win all three of his games on the Saturday 3-0, and then lose all three of his games on the Sunday. But still not managed to get the biggest fall, because there's a prize at the at Water Bowl for the Fish Out of Water prize, which is where the person that falls the furthest. And he, even though he won all three on the Saturday and then lost all three on Sunday, he didn't get that, because someone else managed that as well. But fewer bonus points, things like that. Yes, lots of fun. I was just thinking about painting and things. The other thing with the NAF Championship does is the dual thing. Did you?
I entered last year.
We did. Didn't you have some ideas for what you were going to do last year, or did we threw the ideas around and then I actually ended up?
I didn't get anything done.
The mascots thing. Yeah. I can't decide whether to do it this year or not. Have you seen in the newsletter? There was an amazing. Did you read your newsletter?
No.
You didn't read the NAF newsletter?
No. I normally do.
Yeah.
I don't think I've read the last one.
Wow. That's all right. It had a Manticore Rich, who does all the desktop publishing stuff for the NAF, has made a display base, which turns, and it's in his dual entry is on that, and it's made, it looks like a block dice.
Okay, it's interesting.
It's amazing. It's You should go read your newsletter.
I will go and check that out.
But yes, so that's about everything that's been happening. Really, the road to the NAF was a big online tournament, and the World Cup's the big tabletop tournament. The NAF Championship, the hotel deal is finished now. But we're on about 100 people going to that. Dungeon Bowl's coming up, which has got about 100 people coming to it as well. So a few big tournaments coming around. But you're not going into any before Thrud, you don't think?
I don't think so.
Very wise.
It's going to be a small year for me in terms of the tournament. So if I can get to Thrud, I'll be happy. That's one I've been meaning to do for a while. So
you haven't been to Thrud before?
Nope.
Ah. Andy normally goes.
Yes. Yeah.
And there's good camping going on.
Yes. It's the side activities, I think, that really make that one different from the others, from what I've heard.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's sort of that. It's sort of the atmosphere. It's got this sort of big garden-y type thing, and people just... It's really chilled in between games, and obviously when people are finishing their games and stuff. And it's nice in the evening as well. The auction is bonkers, completely. People spend huge amounts of money. Like, it was over £2,000 was spent by the people in the room.
Yeah, I'm going to be saving up for that. I've submitted a few things for the auction in previous years, away with something.
Yes, people are still paying for it now, I think, because they put this bid in and then just... say they will pay for it at some point.
Great. So Frank does installments.
He does. It's called the Bank of Frank. Yes, people pay for a long time. Especially Hawk has bought ridiculous amounts of stuff, I think. But, it's all for charity. It's all good. So there we go.
Legacy team.
Oh, yes, I should talk about that.
Yes, let's talk about that.
Absolutely. It's the TFF Legacy team, and it's going to be Pro Elves. And we've got... It's the most popular one I've seen, I think. If everyone comes through, we're going to have this massive team. We're going to have all the positionals, loads of linemen, all the stars, reroll counters, head coach, wizard, and it's going to be awesome. And you've got your figure?
I've got a second edition Elf Blitzer that's now undercoated, is waiting some paint.
That's good progress. There's supposed to be some on the way to me from Canada already.
Awesome.
So fingers crossed. So I'll get some painting, get some pictures done of those. I'm not actually going to contribute a model to this one, I think, because I didn't sign up for one.
Oh no!
So I was going to make a display base, and that could be counted.
Well, I suppose you can.
But I probably won't win it anyway. I don't think. I'm not sure if the organizer.
Your luck's in. You've won a few.
I have won a few. I'll have to think about the best way to do the draw. But yeah, it's going to be really good. I think. I really like the legacy teams because my painting's not the best, but my figures don't tend to look out of place. I don't think. Once they're on the team and everything, it all looks nicely together. Even though there's some really really talented painters take part.
Yeah, it is amazing how cohesive the teams look.
Yeah.
Given the fact that each model's painted by someone different.
Yeah. So, there was a nice one for the water bowl. They've managed to get 6 ogres and plenty of snollings. And then Nippy put it on an amazing display base. The display base I make won't be as good as that, but I'll do my best. Yeah, that's good fun. Cool. I think that'll do for now. That's all the Blood Bowl news for the moment.
Okay.
And we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much.
Right. Bye.
So, do you want to have a quick introduction of the Australian sort of Blood Bowl tournament scene then?
Yeah, certainly. So, I mean, one of the things, there's probably around about 24 tournaments throughout the year. There's probably 4 really big ones that happen in Australia. So, those would be CanCon, which happens early in the year in January.
Yeah.
It's part of a large convention, also known as CanCon. And it's also the Australian Major tournament. And that's normally run as a progression.
Yep.
Later in the year, Youth Bowl, which is normally around June, July, this year is going to be July. And that's one of the very first, resurrection tournaments that were ever run in Australia.
Oh, okay.
And it's probably one of the largest tournaments we get as well. I think it normally gets around about the 60, 70 mark in terms of people. So the people come from all around Australia to attend those two.
Okay.
The other next big one, probably Southern Strike Bowl, which is normally around August, September, down in Adelaide, which is in South Australia. And that gets a reasonable turnout, mostly South Australians, but I mean, I've been to that one a few times. And again, because it's sort of in more central in Australia, you tend to get a few people from Perth and Western Australia coming over for that, as well as a lot of Victorians who are down south from us here in Sydney as well. So. And I mean, it's one of the things I think most of these tournaments have in common, is that they spearheaded sort of by Youth Bowl and Viral, who you're probably familiar with. He came up with the Fame Shield and assisted with that. He's driven a lot of very cool merchandise for Youth Bowl, and I think Southern Strike Bowl in particular has followed suit, as has the fourth one, which is Sand Groper.
They have the miniatures. They have the kangaroo miniature and the koala miniature and stuff like that. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Southern Strike Bowl probably led with the miniatures. So there was a little kangaroo. There was a koala. There was a Tasmanian devil. A number of different miniatures that they've created every year. Olaf, the Stout, who's the tournament coordinator for that tournament, he gets an idea. In the last few years, it's actually been the MVP
of
the tournament. So whichever player in someone's team is voted as the most valuable player by all of their opponents, and he gets a custom-made miniature made up for that and given out to everyone who attends the tournament, and it's usually through Impact Miniatures, so it's available normally for sale after the fact as well.
Excellent. So you were saying that Uke Bowl is one of the only resurrection ones. So are most tournaments progression then?
No, so Uke Bowl was the first resurrection tournament. Sorry, just before I go on, number four was Sandgroper. That's okay. That's over in Perth. So it's actually the last year. It's the ninth year, and last year they're going to run Sandgroper for a little while. What's happening with the Sandgroper after this year remains to be seen, but there's been a bit of a change in terms of the guys who have been supporting that tournament. So hopefully the Blood Bowl remains strong over in Western Australia, but certainly the Sandgroper, I'm taking the opportunity this year to hopefully to get back to it as well. myself, and they again tend to have a lot of merchandise going with that particular tournament as well. But sorry, the question was
Eucalyptus Bowl. So did Eucalyptus Bowl start Resurrection Wins?
Yeah. Yeah, it did. So before that, most of the tournaments run in Australia. CanCon was run before that, but they're all progression. And I think Double Skulls actually came out here, and alongside Chunky, who was one of the Australian coaches out here, they started Duke Bowl back in 2005, I believe, and it was the first big Resurrection. The majority of tournaments now are Resurrection.
Okay.
I think the majority of Australians prefer that in terms of a tournament that's sort of less variability, people not rolling up stats and your best player not getting killed in the first game and never being able to buy him back, things like that. So majority now are Resurrection, but Yuke Bowl was the first one to sort of lead that trend.
Okay. Progression ones are lots of work for the organisers as well. We've only got one progression one in the UK, and it's just huge amounts of sort of paperwork and admin and stuff, it seems.
That's one of the things I like about the Blood Bowl community. I think it's the general consensus on most of the forums down here is that there's very few people who will sort of win at all costs, as they say in the on other forums for other games. So generally speaking, you can trust people. What they normally do in CanCon as well, and unfortunately it does mean that Gav, the organizer, has to normally sit out.
Yeah.
Not have time to play, but he actually tracks. So at the end of every game, you record who got SBPs, who got what skills.
Yeah.
Both opponents sign it, and he actually keeps a record of all of them. So he can actually rebuild the entire tournament round by round if he feels the need to check if anything's gone amiss.
Yeah, absolutely. So lots of work.
A lot of paperwork. Absolutely.
That's crazy. So just in terms of, to give people an idea, because in the UK, 3 hours is my maximum travel time, really, to a tournament. I go up to Manchester, and that's 3 hours driving. What sort of time investment are we talking to get to these various tournaments?
Well, within Sydney itself, the maximum would probably be about 2 hours drive. But generally speaking, if you're traveling to most of the tournaments in Australia throughout the year, you're talking about flights.
Yep.
To put that in perspective, Sydney to Perth, which is the longest within Australia, it's about a 5-hour flight. So it's equivalent, I think, from London to St. Petersburg, if you were to travel that. So it encompasses a fair amount of distance. If you factor in New Zealand as well, because down here, New Zealand's quite tight with Australia in terms of the tournaments that we all attend, you're adding about an extra 3 hours to that as well. So the guys, for example, this coming weekend, we have the Oz Bowl State Championships.
Okay.
Which is states from around Australia and also New Zealand coming together in Perth, teams of six where we're basically playing. The Kiwi guys who are coming over for that basically have about an 8-hour flight.
That's amazing. Yeah, so for that, we could get to the US for that 8 hours.
Absolutely. It's a little bit easier if you're going up and down. So Brisbane to Sydney is about an hour and a half. Same from Sydney down to Victoria and Melbourne. And then it's about a two and a half hour flight from Sydney to Adelaide. So it's around about 2 to 3 hours. It's just when you throw yourself out to Perth or across to New Zealand, where it's about a 3-4 hour flight, that it takes up a bit more time.
Yeah. That's impressive. That's good dedication. So the Oz Bowl, Oz Bowl's the big forum out there, isn't it, in terms of organising Blood Bowl?
Yeah, so ausbowl.com, ozbowl.com. That was started principally for Australians. New Zealanders are obviously welcome, and I know that yourself and a number of international people sort of drop in and say hi and promote things there as well. It's principally for Australia. However, there are two other forums that are used. One is West Gamer, which is principally driven by Western Australia. It's all their 40K Warhammer stuff. And the guys who play Blood Bowl in Western Australia tend to use that as their coordinating forum because they have other gaming interests as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of their community. But they do also come across to Oz Bowl and keep us up to date with what's going on over there, as well as joining the conversation. And separately, New Zealand have their own website, which is NZBBN,
Oh, yeah.
.com. So, yeah, the New Zealand Blood Bowl League, it actually started as a personal league forum for one of the three major leagues that have happening over there in Wellington. And from that, the other guys down up in Auckland and down in Christchurch asked if they could be part of it. And so it's basically grown into a New Zealand forum, basically. Again, frequent visitors between Australia and New Zealand tend to go to both sites and to keep up to date with what's happening.
Yeah. I suppose we should track back a little bit as to your role. So you're the NTO for Australia?
That is correct. So I basically help to coordinate the NAF prizes for tournaments, as well as obviously people signing up to the NAF, getting their block dice and moving forward, getting their D6s and fame shields and obviously whatever else we come up with in future years as well. So I tend to travel to a lot of tournaments. I think one of the reasons why I was put forward for the role is because I know the majority of people who regularly attend tournaments by name and I've actually met them. and possibly played against them as well. So I know a fair few of the people down here in Australia and New Zealand. But otherwise, yeah, just supporting. There's a few guys, again, due to the geographical distances and the fact that the post isn't that cheap within Australia, I tend to leave a few sets of dice with various people so that they can assist me by giving those out to new sign-ups in the various locations around Australia and New Zealand as well. For those times between the major tournaments where otherwise I'll send a care package for the NAF over to the tournament or deliver it personally myself.
Excellent. And so do you cover New Zealand as well? Is that part of your...
That's correct, yeah. So both Australia and New Zealand, I do them both.
Excellent. So speaking of NAF sort of giveaways, gifts, I suppose, it works slightly differently, does it? Did I hear there was something you got extra? Is there an Australian specific NAF thing on top of the...
Okay, just in terms of, I think, with the fluctuating currency, etc., what was coordinated by my predecessor, Babs, was that effectively we collect slightly more money, so it's about $15 Australian and New Zealand from the guys down here to sign up, and what we'll generally do is coordinate five out of that $15 to go back to the tournament where the person signed up as prize support for the following year. So the more people we have signing up at each tournament and or renewing at each tournament, obviously we reinvest some of those funds into prizes and send them along to the tournament as well, just to help them sort of pad out their prize table a little for the next year.
That's a good system.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know when Babs indicated to me, he was surprised. In fact, I think the NAF guys were surprised when he broached the subject that other people hadn't brought it up before. So, yeah, it certainly works well here. I think it encourages people to sign up, if nothing else, to help provide some support to the tournaments that they enjoy in the following year as well.
Yes, it's one of those answers as to why should we join the NAF? That question that comes up every now and again.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. So that's the sort of tournament scene. So what's the league sort of situation? Do most people have a table that they play in the big sort of metropolitan areas?
Yes, I mean, it's again, there's a fair few leagues floating around, and we're always trying to think of ways on AusBowl and even on NZBBN on how to reach out to those people and encourage them to play more Blood Bowl and maybe meet the rest of the community.
Yeah.
But certainly Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, Perth, Brisbane, and then your major cities in New Zealand, Auckland, Wellington, and Christchurch all have at least one, if not multiple, leagues running. So Melbourne, for example, has two or three leagues running at any given moment. Sydney has two at least. Perth, again, they did have two. I think they're merging in the current change that's going on over there and merging into one combined league. And then New Zealand, each of those cities has one. So there's three major leagues, all who run their own tournaments over in New Zealand as well.
Yeah. Do you go over to the New Zealand tournaments?
Yeah, I've been this year, actually. I just come back from the Capital Shield, which was the third tournament that they've started and the third one that I've attended. So I've been to the Greenstone Cup, which is in Auckland, and also the Mainland Bowl, which is in Christchurch as well. So yeah, I've been to all three. And again, one of the things that sort of I started attending tournaments to play Blood Bowl against new people.
Yeah.
And I found that the majority of tournaments within Australia, the atmosphere is really good. You get to meet new people, even if you're meeting people you've played or met before. Yeah, it's just, it's generally a very positive atmosphere. And even if you're losing, or taking a challenging team like I tend to, you can still have a great deal of fun without, sort of getting too caught up in who's winning what at the end of the day.
Yeah. How do they go for prizes? Because you get different tournaments over here, have different numbers of prizes and for different things. Do you have things like a Stunty Cup? Is that a thing?
Yeah, a few tournaments do. So Youth Bowl, I think, again, probably started the Stunty Cup, and it was an effort by the person who took over again, Viral, to promote people playing more stunties at the tournament. And that's been fairly successful. That's run every year. Not all tournaments have a Stunty Cup, but certainly normally you'll have a painting prize. We often have prizes at some of the tournaments for the best custom fields.
Oh, okay.
Sportsmanship, obviously, you can normally get a prize, first, second, and third. There's normally some form of spoon handed out, or booby prize, if you will, for coming last, and or an encouragement award, not necessarily for coming last, but for new blood, people who have made traveled a big distance, and otherwise may not have beaten everyone that they played against, but obviously you'd like to encourage them to come back. So it normally takes the form of giving them something like some dice or a new team or something to encourage them to participate more in the community as well.
Yeah, we have a local tournament that has is best newcomer, which is three or fewer tournaments that they've played, which is a similar sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, yeah, as you say, I mean, some tournaments are well-funded. Viral at Youth Bowl tends to have an enormous prize table, and the people who are collecting last sometimes feel embarrassed by getting quite a good prize because
they have
a job at funding that. Some of the others, I mean, CanCon again, Southern Strike Bowl, Sandgroper, these guys all have really well-stocked tables. Even the smaller tournaments tend to have something for a lot of people there, and it's sort of sharing the wealth, if you will, of the table across everyone who attends. So a couple of tournaments that I've run, or on behalf of one of my friends here who couldn't run it himself at the time, I randomised the prizes after the first place and sports and painting, just to say, look, everyone comes along, has a chance at getting some of the best prizes on the table as well. So there's a fair diversity in terms of what's available, but generally speaking, a lot of people walk away with at least something at a Australian and New Zealand event.
Oh, brilliant. I'm intrigued by the best field prize. Is that a big thing, people making their own fields?
It can be. I mean, ironically, some of the people who win it tend to be the people who win it a lot, because they're the ones who tend to like to build boards. And there's a fair spate of travel boards, for example. You can fold them up into like a suitcase-sized parcel and then open it up again. And again, I think that was pioneered, at least within Australia, by Viral.
Yeah, I've made one of those, and I've copied Viral's tutorial, basically.
So he saw it online and then sort of played around with it, and he's made some enormous boards which sort of stretch the realms of travel. But
yeah,
I think if anything, it's probably the distances. So if you're traveling locally, it's a lot of local coaches who'll have the best boards. And again, I've seen some really good ones down in Victoria. I've seen some brilliant ones in Perth. Even just some the sheer size in Adelaide as well, that were just crazy. But you're less likely to get onto a plane and travel with those things. So
I guess so.
The boards tend to come from the local people. But again, it can be a hotly contested prize, and certainly one that I think encourages another aspect of the game, which is a cool place to line up your little men.
Yeah, absolutely. There is one tournament, there's the B7 in Germany, where every game is played on a custom pitch. And I think they're the pitches that they've got themselves, and there's about 30 of them, I guess. But yeah, it's not a big thing. Most people just play on, especially with FF fields, those are proliferating, really. So people have their own custom pitches, but they're commercially made rather than purchased. rather than...
Yeah, absolutely. I've got one or two of those myself, and they're really quite good quality. I'm very happy with them.
Yeah. Anyway, I think I'm getting to that situation where I have enough Blood Bowl pitches. I'm trying to think how many is a good number to have.
But then you have to stop and think, Mike, will you ever really have enough? That's the collector in you cries out, there's never enough.
I'm still convincing myself I need more teams. I've got about 30 teams at the moment. And I'm thinking, well, I need another variant of that one. And then my sons are just getting into it. So my youngest has asked for a human team for his birthday. I'm saying, well, I've got two human teams. I've got the original third ed. I've got some impact miniatures humans. Where to go next? So we're going to end up with at least four of each team, I think. This is where Games Workshop are missing out, because they thought there was a limited market, but what they didn't realise is that we're all ridiculous. So,
at least slight variations, and we'll collect more.
So in terms of... you say playing against new people, of doing that is through online Blood Bowl. How's that organised? Do most people play online? Do they play Cyanide? Do they play Fumble?
Yeah, so there's a very, very large Australia, New Zealand time zone based Fumble League called Southern Waste League, SWL. And they're organised primarily through Fumble. They do drop in and often many of the regulars on AusBowl and the BBN are participants in the Southern Waste League, but they obviously organise themselves through the actual Fumble forums. But certainly if anyone is in Australia and New Zealand and interested in playing Fumble, I would hardly recommend checking out Southern Waste League on Fumble. Great group of people. They turn around, I think, once every week, so it's a weekly game online. Fumble games only tend to take around about an hour, mm-hmm. and they've got various little side, like open leagues, etc., that you can play in, even if you can't commit to the main event. So they do a great job of running that. And yeah, it's something that I've been part of before. It's just something I don't have time to be a part of on a week on week basis. But I drop in there and talk to those guys because they're a good bunch. Cyanide Leagues. Sorry, go ahead.
There is, because I play in the White Isle League, and is it the Southern Waste League that we have the Ashes in?
That's correct. I wasn't going to bring that up necessarily. we've played the Ashes, I think, the last 2 years running at least, and I believe that the Southern Waste League have won both of those to date. So.
Well done.
Absolutely. So, I mean, it's something I know that everyone's very keen to be part of that Ashes competition from the Southern Waste League, and they compete throughout the season to make the cut, basically, to have a swipe at you guys. So it's those sorts of things, I think, that I enjoy about online, particularly because Fumble Cyanide, I've sort of mentioned earlier, it's up to 5 hours to fly to the other side of the country, or an international flight to go to New Zealand. So you don't get a chance to play against these guys who you meet, particularly if you travel with a lot of tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
But playing online, you have a chance to catch up, have a chat and roll some virtual dice with them a little bit more frequently, so it's quite good value. And then even as demonstrated by the Ashes, give or take time zone variants, the chance to play against, for example, guys in the UK and other parts of the world, which other than the big major tournaments like the World Cup, which we're sending three teams to again this year, you don't get that chance every month or even year, so it's good to be a part of.
And what about Cyanide?
Cyanide is a little bit less centralised. So at the moment, there's one league, the Publicans Wager League, which is based on one race per team. There's only about 10 coaches in it. I'm a member of that, being run by Sinister Dexter on AusBowl. Mm-hmm. So that's one-shot league at the end of it, depending on the popularity. Sinister Dexter may run that again. New Zealand Forum has their own New Zealand Online, which I think has a very good turnout. It's around about 14 or 16 coaches, and they're playing weekly through the Cyanide game at the moment. There's at least one or two other little Cyanide leagues, which I'm in the process of reaching out to at the moment. So one is a little Australian Blood Bowl League, who, again, is just a group of friends who use the Cyanide Forum to overcome geographic or other challenges. And play on the Cyanide. They're not part of the Ozbol forum as such, but right. They've got their own little forum. So just trying to reach out and give each of these groups a reason potentially to join Ozbol, or at least to pop in every once in a while and give us an update on how they're going, to make sure that any new people who might be interested in joining those leagues know where to find them as well. So that's a work in progress, but hopefully we move that along in the short future.
Oh, that's great. It is difficult sometimes to reach out to people, because it is a game you can just play with a few mates. And I did that for a very long time, and then just realised that there was this big community out there. And until you realise.
Yeah, until you realise. I mean, I played for many, many years in my own little homegrown league. And then the first Youth Bowl, which one of my friends found out about online and said, oh, there's a tournament for Blood Bowl. And I thought that was the best thing since sliced bread, and I have to get to that. And then that's how I was introduced to the fact that there were other people playing the game of Blood Bowl and sort of the community, and it grew from there. So I know that there's a lot of people in Australia who do play, even people I've spoken to at tournaments who say, oh yeah, normally we just play amongst ourselves. And there's nothing wrong with that, of course, but obviously, new people coming in and joining the community is always a positive, and new people being able to find these little groups and maybe play with them as well is a good thing, which is why obviously we try to promote Ozbol, or I try to promote Ozbol when I can at tournaments and when I meet new players. So, and obviously the NAF as well as a good source of information about where other like-minded players can be found.
Absolutely. So, speaking of playing against other people, have you noticed at all any difference in play styles between different, I suppose, between different countries or between different areas?
Not more anecdotal than anything. I mean, I've been to the two NAF World Cups so far, and some of the coaches who I played there were just clinical in their positioning, and everything they did seemed to be exactly the worst thing that they could do for me at that point. So they just destroyed me. I think anecdotally, again, one or two other people who were there with me said a lot of the European coaches that they've played against like to leave a gap, maybe to entice you to attack, but then you overcommit and sort of they counterpunch. Whereas in Australia, I think, and New Zealand for that matter, there seems to be a fair amount of just solid cage play, running plays, etc. Obviously, those who are playing Wood Elves and Skaven approach it slightly differently, but I do think at tournaments you tend to find a lot of bash teams, as we've characterised them, in more numbers than you would the flare teams.
All right. As such. And do you think that's because of the rule sets? What sort of rule sets do you normally do? Is it just like a few skills on various players?
Yeah, so anywhere from straight, it's normally at least 110 or 1,100,000, possibly 110, 115, 120, and 125. So those are the standards. There is one tournament, the Canberra Cup, that runs 1.5 as well. but they tend to, one or two tournaments either allow you to see the fairly low stars in your team and a bunch of cheerleaders, or you can put one skill on everyone and sort of build them up. But that may be certainly one of the reasons why Bash is useful. If you can put one skill on, say, seven players in an AWP team, you're going to put a lot of block into that team and cover that initial skill gap and leverage their strength, compared to, for example, seven skills on an elf team, which, while useful, isn't as useful as potentially being able to skill those elves up much faster than the orcs and the dwarves normally would skill as well.
Yeah, you can win a game with three wood elves. You can't win a game with three orcs.
Absolutely. But, I mean, there does tend to be a fair few stunties as well in Australia and New Zealand. Almost every tournament I go to, there's at least one stunty coach, and that's not necessarily driven by Stunty Cup, because only a small handful of the tournaments have the Stunty Cup.
Okay.
I think people just enjoy rolling with the little guys and seeing how they can play.
Yeah, I tend to find, because of the Stunty Cup and because of the sort of quirkiness and the secret weapons and things, I tend to find stunties are over represented it quite often. It's the sort of middling teams like High Elves that tend to miss out, I think.
Yeah, well, if people are really trying to put the wins on the board, then something like Wood Elves and Skaven, or Orcs and Dwarves, are the extremes, and they tend to be better at what they do than the High Elves in the middle. Yeah. Whereas the Stunties are always, well, I can just rock up and have some fun playing. So yeah, I think there is a band of teams in the middle there that maybe are underrepresented. One of the things that's become a bit of a trend in Australia and New Zealand, pioneered initially by the Carnage Club, which is a group of three, now four coaches from the mountains here in Sydney, was that to play all 24 teams. So they were the first group to do it in Australia. I think we've now got eight coaches who have played all 24 teams at a NAF tournament and have a record with them. And there's at least another 5 to 10 who are probably 3 or 4 teams away from that and are actively pursuing getting all those teams played. So that has encouraged a little bit more versatility, certainly within some tournaments. But it's fun to do, and I think playing all the teams, if nothing else, it broadens your perspective on what they're capable of and how better to run them and also play against them as well.
Yeah, I think it's up to about 40 worldwide who've done that.
It is, yeah. I think it's about 52, actually.
Oh, okay.
Because one of the guys here is looking, getting some patches made, and when he was having a look at the figures the other week, and he said there's about 52 coaches now in the world who have played all 24.
Excellent. I think I was the 23rd, and Darkson and I did it at the same tournament, and he put me as the 23rd and him as the 24th because he wanted to be the 24th person to do the 24. So. And it was fair his enough. Tournament, so I couldn't say no to that.
Good argument. Absolutely.
So we've mentioned the World Cup a few times. Are you heading over?
I am indeed. Third one for myself and second one for Team Wombat, although the core of the team is the same. So that's myself, Fnord 23, previously known as Sengrile.
Oh, yeah.
And Tomzy, and then made up with Creature and Garden Gnome as well. And then I believe Nikrin's joining us this time. So we all played effectively at the last one, and then before that, it was me, Tomzy, and Nord that played in the first one representing Australia.
Superb. Are you all sorted for it, all organised flights and things?
That remains to be seen. I think I've got my flights booked. We've registered, certainly. There's, as I mentioned, there's two Australian and one ANZAC or Australia-New Zealand team coming over again this time. So that's the same as we had last time. And I think we're all in the process of booking our flights and accommodation around about now.
Excellent. Out of the 148 teams that are going to be going, that is, I can't believe how big it is.
Absolutely. I mean, it's one of those things. It's what probably led to, in part at least, the nature and structure of our Ausbowl performance down here, which is the state championship and the team championship, which is the alternate years. And it's just the fact, I mean, you get to hang out with a bunch of good people, drinking some tasty beer and rolling dice and having a laugh and talking about all the aspects of the hobby and enjoying basically different aspects of the community. So the World Cup certainly has been, probably the two World Cups I've been to have been some of the best Blood Bowl tournaments I've ever been to, just from that social aspect. And our Ausbowl team and state championships, I think everyone who comes to those down here in Australia and New Zealand feels the same way about them, that they're a great opportunity to meet people from around Australia, where the travel is such a long distance and potentially an expensive proposition that it doesn't happen every time.
Excellent. How did you get on at the last World Cup?
Last World Cup, we were Team Wombats were at table 2 on round 3 against Team Palau, and that was as high as we flew. flew too close to the sun, as they say, and we crashed and burned from there. We ended up reasonably placed somewhere in the middle of the pack, but we had a good time. Personally, I ended up one or two places behind Tomzy, who is a bit of a nemesis of mine on the Blood Bowl pitch, so that's about apt that he would pick me. And I was about third place Australian overall, so had a great time. I was playing my Lizards and, met And I suppose the best thing is, like, I got to meet and play 9 brand new coaches that I'd never played before, and have a great time.
You managed to avoid the other Aussie teams.
Yeah, we're a little bit concerned at one stage, particularly Team Anzac, because they were lurking around us.
Yeah.
And they were sort of playing. I mean, they actually placed reasonably well. I think they came about 10th overall. So they did very well for themselves. And yeah, it looked like we might meet each other at one stage or another. And it's like, oh, well, long way to travel to play against the guys though. Can go down the coast to play. But, you know, we dodged that bullet, and yeah, we got to play a lot near to them before, but not have to play against them as such.
Excellent. All right, anything else you think we should talk about? I've got TFF written down here. I can't remember. Oh, and Facebook, because we're building up this Facebook community. Do you know if most of many Aussies drop into that?
I know that there's the Ausbowl has some Facebook presence. Personally, I am not part of Facebook, but it's something I've been looking at getting into, just to, if nothing else, spread the word of Blood Bowl a little bit wider.
Yeah.
And I mean, the list of tournaments and also the different leagues that people have access to locally to themselves. But no, it's not something. In fact, one of the things I have on my to-do list here is to make use of the league aspect of the NAF website. I know that you've promoted that before on Ausbowl. One or two of our league commissioners have put their details up, but not everyone has. So I'm going to encourage that on Ausbowl and on New Zealand Blood Bowl League, just to make sure that there's another option for people who may not know those websites but find the NAF to find the leagues and join the community as well.
Yeah, it's all good.